Welcome to another episode of President Enlightenment, and as usual, I accept with honor and with gratitude that our guests presented, that they took their time, their preciousness of who they are, to come to share with us their journey as to how they walk through it and the tools that they gain, the wisdom, the knowledge, the information that they, as they share with us, that you and I can learn so that we can become a better human spirit while we're here on this beautiful earth of ours. I want to thank you, Inga, for coming to Threads of Enlightenment. Thank you and welcome.
Thank you for having me, Ken. And you introduced me with Inga, but maybe I should say my full name, Inga Nordin. And yeah. I'm actually from Sweden, Stockholm, the capital of Sweden. So if I speak strangely, that is why.
I don't think you speak strangely at all. Tell the people some of the things that you have that whereby they can get to you. I know you have the workshop and the mentorship. Talk to them about those things that you have right now that you have created as a result of your journey that you're now journeying.
My journey through life, right?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, I actually started life 70 years ago. I have to say that because people then tend to say, oh, I can't listen to her. But what I say about that is that you actually have a life experience to draw from.
Yeah.
And I started my new journey at 65. So if anyone out there listening think they are too old, forget it. It's never too late to start over. So what I do now, after 65, I've actually went on a new journey. I have to say my background when I retired, because I was working in corporate a lot in different positions. I was a manager, I was a project manager, I was sales. A lot of it was with regards to sales, actually. And I had over 35 years in this, and I was doing my job, doing what I should, and just sticking to it, because that was what I was supposed to do, right?
Yes.
And then, when I retired, I actually felt like, is this all there is? I have so much more to give. I was used to be in the middle of everything. And then I realized, there are other things out there. You don't have to stick to having a job and get paid. There are so many other things. And that's when I start my new job.
Yeah, it's fascinating how you, I'm talking to you, Inga, and you achieve the things that they tell us that we ought to pursue. You know, you go after the things, you get into corporate America, you get the job, and then you retire. And here you are at your retirement, and you're sitting there going, is that it? I think that is that is a beautiful imagery to deliver to the people, because that is not it. You have to. There's more than that, and so I know you started to allude to that. But isn't that fascinating, though, that you did the things that they told us that we ought to do and arrive at where we ought to arrive, and then after you got there, you realized, no, that was not it. And you started
doing no, it's boring to be retired. I'm not the person to sit on the bench and feed the pigeons, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And in the USA, you should move down to Florida and be sitting there, right?
Yeah.
No. And also, I felt I had so much more to give.
Yeah.
So what I actually did was I went to a seminar by Success Resources. Have you heard about them?
Yes. Let me ask you a question, though. Let me ask you a question, though. Why did you pick that specific type of seminar to go to? Why did you pick that specific?
That is a really good question. And that depends on that. I actually went on another one in Sweden before. A kind of training about economy and things. Even if I have a Master of Science in Master of Business Administration.
Yeah.
So I have the economy there already. Mm-hmm. But I mean, looking into your own perspective on economy, yeah. And that's why I actually joined that seminar. It was free of charge as well.
Yeah.
And it was life changing.
Wow, that's amazing. That walk with me for a minute. I want to talk to us, because it is our custom here at Threads, is to go back and gather information as to how you were programmed, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
How was it with your family life, and how did your identity, because it's important to go back there, because we gather some insight as to how you were thinking and how you transition and stuff. Like, talk to us a little about your family.
Oh, should we take all the background? I'm actually one of two sisters. Mm-hmm. My mom had scratching feet, as we say. She moved and moved, and she always thought that the next place would be better than the previous one. I think I'm a lot like my mom now that I think about it. I'm not having the scratching feet, mm-hmm. because I need to have a place that is my own, where I am. But she actually was performing in the outdoors performance with a gymnastic group. She was driving a motorcycle through Europe after World War, mm-hmm. she and another girl. So she was doing a lot of things. But my mom and dad, my dad was always supportive of everything. My mom was ill when I was born. And when my sister was born, she was worse. She had rear back problems. So my dad had to take care of me first, and then my sister as well. So there was a lot of dad to look up to. Mm. And my dad was too nice. he didn't say, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that.
Yeah.
He was so supportive. And my mom as well.
Yeah.
So I had really supportive family members. So when you talk about the pillars that is doing your foundation,
yes,
mom, dad, religion, mm-hmm. and environment. Religion I got from my grandma.
Mm-hmm.
She was on that journey.
Yeah.
My mom and dad, as I said, they were supportive, but they had their own journey, so to speak, but they followed the road after they got married, that is.
Mm-hmm.
And then the environment, that had a big impact on me, because I moved 8 times before I finished high school. But that is not only bad, that is also something that has made me be adaptable.
Yeah.
Two situations, right?
Mm-hmm.
I always had to learn to new people.
Mm-hmm.
So that is one of the things. Yeah, sorry.
No. How? Because that is, it's a gift in a way when we can look back. I think the gift of adaptability, it's a restlessness that you know, our parents would have from moving, could be also their profession and different things like that that would cause that. But the children, I know, it creates like a restlessness. But when I look at it, and especially in my life, I thought it gave me the ability to adapt to people, to adapt quicker in circumstances, mm-hmm. new circumstances, because you're always in a new circumstance because you're constantly moving. Yes. You know?
Yeah. And also one more thing is that I had a feeling at that time that I needed to fit in.
Yeah.
So it took some years before I said, no, I don't want to do this. I stepped out of everything
mm-hmm.
for one period of time because I wanted to show, this is me.
Yeah.
I'm not like the one, the crowd I'm with.
How old were you, Inga, when you made that decision, when you said no?
That was actually after I studied on university.
Okay.
Before that, I was at university. I was like, oh, yeah, I'll go on stage.
Hmm.
I'll go do this. I'll go and do this because I love that.
Yeah.
And it's more like when you are with the close friends you have. And they were like, when I moved to Stockholm, where I'm living now, mm-hmm. and I said no for the first time, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
They were like, what? What's happening to her?
Wow.
See, she's so changed. And I mean, that was me coming out, if you like me.
Mm-hmm.
not like someone that tried to fit in all the time.
Yeah, it's important, I think, as you said, your environment can play such a great part in our programming that a lot of people are afraid to not agree with the programming. I said, no, I want to do something else. And so because of whatever it is to be belong, that need to belong, and it takes a strong personality, and I think you probably got that from the fact that your parents were instilling the ability that you can do anything, you can be anything. So there was not a limitation within your thought process that you are not able to step out of what I call normality. Normality is the I call it the invisible fence in the where you have to behave, you have to be normal. And if you're like your friend's reaction was, is something wrong with her? You know? And so
And now they are even more like that. When I'm doing what I'm doing now, they are even more, what's happening to her? It's crazy.
That's beautiful.
But normal, what is normal? Yeah. What is normal, Ken?
I don't know. I've been asking that question for the longest time. Someone, please explain it to me so that I can understand what it is, so I can have a conceptual image of what that means, because I don't know what that means, but I know it is used to keep people from being, I want to say, to go beyond that invisible fence, because they're saying, you know, the crazy people live over there, or the bad boys or the bad girls, because, quote unquote, they're not normal. They don't behave like how they should, or dress like how they should, or act like how you should. And so that's what, so it's always you're not behaving or acting the way that society as a whole.
Society believes you ought to do, right?
Yes. And so that's one of the pillars that you were talking about that frames the mindset of who we pretend that we are until we come to our retirement, sitting down going, yes.
No way, I'm not staying there. There's so many things. But I also have to tell you one more thing that actually happened to me when I grew up.
Yeah.
When my grandma died, we were on her funeral, and I was talking a lot with her. What is it? The one married to her siblings. Do you understand?
Yeah, yeah.
She had a lot of... They were talking a lot with me. And afterward, my mom said to me, they never talked to me. They never talked to any of the kids. And I said, why? And then I realized they were impressed because I was the first one that studied at the university, the whole family.
Wow.
And they listened to me because I was doing that.
Yeah.
I got my Master of Science in Computer Science and Technology.
Mm-hmm.
And they listened because I, in their eyes, had a higher education.
Oh.
And I was, if I would have known what my mom was experiencing, I would have told them off.
I think it also, again, society and a cultural part of our ingrained programming. Some look down at others less than because of education, because of money, because of all of these different things that they put value on that really not that in, you know, it's there's a need to for money and stuff like that and whatever. But when it comes to an individual happiness, money is not the answer because millionaires are killing themselves all over the place. We got people that have money that are just taking themselves out. We have people that don't have money that are also taking themselves out. So then it's not money. There's something else that is missing that we need.
May I say one thing there, Ken? Sorry for interrupting you. Because I was studying 2 weeks at Wharton School in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
It was the last part of my studies for Executive Master of Business Administration. And the course was about from functional to general management.
Mm-hmm.
And on this course, there were people from all around the world. And this, I mean, in Sweden, we don't have the dating system, for instance, in Sweden. Yeah. Not like you have in the States.
Yeah.
And there were guys there where I talked to, and they said, well, we haven't been with our wives as long as we've been with you now during 2 weeks. And I said, what? Are you crazy? Well, society expects us. At work, we go out and play golf with our colleagues or with our customers and things. Yeah. And then we do this and then we do this. And that was, for me, was like, what are you talking about? That's yeah. not relationship building, right? And also there were veterans there. And they said to me, oh, you're talking to me. Why shouldn't I? Said, I really love what you have been doing. I think you have been doing a really great job. People look down at me, they said. And I was like, what is the society going in the States?
Yeah. Wow. Isn't it eye-opening when you it's amazing, man. People, the preconception that we live by and live from, yeah. it's amazing, isn't it? How it governs yeah. our behavior and the way we interact with each other, it's amazing. Where we get that. And again, like that, one of the first pillars.
And it's crazy because also this guy, Howard Perlmutter was his name, the professor at the school. He was talking about how the threat from from Asia,
yeah.
and things like this. And all of a sudden, I couldn't stand it any longer. I said, hang on, can't you ask them? They're sitting here in the room. Is this right? And he was like, what is she opening her mouth? It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, we were all, my belief on that course was that the USA is the center of everything and everything else is abroad.
Yeah.
Something else.
Mm.
So I think that was also an eye opener, if you like.
Yeah. So growing, not even growing up, being in that environment like that, Inga, how did it, formed your thinking? How did it fine-tune your thinking, your belief system as an individual being a part of that scene, as they say, and observing all the behavior from these men and people? How did it shape you?
I was more, for me, it was an eye-opener because I really want to know more about people.
Mm-hmm.
Not where they are from, who they are. And that was really something that I experienced there. I could talk to a lot of guys or females as well. And the way society had taught some of them, I felt was wrong. But I couldn't say it was wrong to them, right?
Yeah.
But I can say an example. When I traveled there, I was told by some guys that had been on those courses before. First of all, when you do the group work, it's gonna be a male white guy that stands up and says, I'm taking charge.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not going to be seen.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? Is this really happening? And then what happened? We were to kind of choose to be in groups. Two people were to choose two more. And then we ended up in a group of 12.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if a group of 12, there's always someone you don't really resonate with, right?
Yeah.
And then we started the group work, and they said, you can, if you like, choose to have a leader for this. And this guy, big, white American, he stood up and he said, oh, I'll take charge. And I was like, what is happening? And I said, you're not. I stood up and said, you're not. And we continued like that. It was like really, really crazy. So at a break, we had a psychologist that was with us all the time at the break told her, I don't understand what this is. I'm never doing this at home. Oh, yeah, I know. I have a rucksack with me that told me this was going to happen. So I'm reacting from that rucksack.
Yeah.
And she said, can you tell the whole group about that? Of course I can, I said.
Mm-hmm.
So I told the group what I had experienced, what I had with me.
Mm-hmm.
And it opened up the whole group quality.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people were the same against this guy.
Yeah.
It was crazy. So I think what the lesson is from here, everybody should think about why they're doing things. What are they having in their rucksack?
Yeah.
Because that is governing a lot, right?
Talk to me after, because your accomplishment is in the corporate America field is extensive, and then you retired and you're out of that arena, and you're home, and your restlessness is increased, and you decide to go to this program. Talk to me that day when you sat in that program. How you said it would change your life. What happened while you were sitting there that caused the life change?
Well, what actually happened was that I signed up for a new course.
Mm-hmm.
That changed my life.
Mm-hmm.
The travel from there, not so much this first course, but that actually made me sign up for something called Wanted Me. And that was a program with 5 courses over 1.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, and during those courses, I was also in different camps. And I was always the oldest one in those camps.
Mm-hmm.
And then the youngest and the oldest, we were kind of, okay, you are the youngest, I'm the oldest, okay, let's do this.
Yeah, yeah.
And then people came up to me and said, you are such an inspiration. You have to step up and be seen.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, am I not seen? But then they explained what they meant by that. And that was something else that I meant by it. Because, I mean, in the crowd of people, I'm always seen.
Yeah.
Even if I'm the smallest one. So people see me. But anyhow, that made me think, okay, maybe it's time to start your own company.
Yeah.
Maybe it's time to do this. And I actually did, at one of the courses, sign up for a training in the States in property investment. So I had a company in the States for some years.
Yeah.
Trying to do property investment. But 2020 came, and we all know what happened then.
Yeah, yeah.
So that couldn't do it. So I had to close that down. But then I started like, okay, what can I do then? Because I've always been wanting to help people.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of people said to me, you can't be that vague. You can't say that you want to help everyone.
Yeah.
You have to have a target group.
Mm-hmm.
So what I actually now have as my target group, I help women step into their power financially, personally, and without compromising their femininity.
Yeah.
Because what I saw during my corporate years was that a lot of females were kind of dressing up like men, acting like men, and their femininity was somewhere else. Or they were using their femininity like, okay.
Yeah. It's I've been in the corporate field, and it's really interesting, the behavior of people and the way they interpret the need to become, as you said, how they use their power, and they recognize it's a really interesting place to be in. It can damage the spirit of a human being if you are not careful, and so I had to walk away from it because I knew that there was something greater, as you found out when you retired. I did it a few years
earlier. You were more enlightened than I was.
I realized that, well, actually what happened was I almost died. That's what happened. I was in the hospital.
Mm.
And my awakening came when I was in ICU, and I realized, I don't need this, you know. Because my sister had asked me a question about 2 years early. Why are you still here? And it troubled me, meaning I wanted to leave and travel and stuff like that. And she kept asking me. She asked me that one question, and it troubled me for 2 years. And then while I was in the hospital, I realized it came to me again. And I was like, okay, I don't need to. And so I got my awakening, my second awakening, as you did. So here you are. You have this underpinning. From when you started talking, there's this underpinning of the desire to help people, which is awesome. I love that. When you began.
Or as you said, serve people, right?
Yes, yes.
Because that is true serving is helping.
Yes, we become servants.
Helping them realize their own power.
Exactly. I would tell people, Jesus was a life coach, because when he when he did something and his disciples were looking at him in amazement, he would say, "Where is your faith?" He pointed back to them and to let them know that you can do the very same thing. This is not just for me to do. He says, "Where is yours? You can do it." So a life coach will look at that person. It is in you. Where is, walking to the power that is you. So talk to me about when you were right here, you began to do the classes and you began to formulate how you're going to go. You said you wanted to help people and then you started fine tuning it a little and being specific about the group that you're dealing. I love your, I call it a mission statement. Those are in business, we call it a mission statement. And I always say the individual needs to find their statement of faith. And the reason why I use that terminology is because it's something that they have to believe in deep. And it is that statement that will govern their behavior and their pursuit of things. Why did you zero in on that piece? Because I know it's part of their teaching, but why did you zero in on a part of helping the people to focus on their purpose?
Because I actually, when 2020 came, I was just starting to run my workshops, and then nobody wanted me to be there. At least they didn't want to come there.
Mm-hmm.
So I started writing my book.
Yeah.
And that is called The Power of You Square, Create a Power Path of Success, Personally and Professionally.
Mm-hmm.
And in there, I'm talking a lot about my journey and connecting through to my work, if you like. Or people tend to say, not workshops, if you are in the States, I've understood. You say boot camp. Because there was a difference. But for me, it wasn't. But anyhow, so I went through that. And I really went through it really a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wrote a chapter in Global Woman Club's book, Tap Into Your Power, 21 Lessons to Help Women Conquer Fear.
Yeah.
And I wrote about the hidden strength of vulnerability.
Yeah.
And I really opened myself up to write that chapter. I actually got help from Travis Fox. I don't know if you know him.
Mm-hmm.
He helped me to sit down with my sorrow, sit down with me and really look into my foundation.
Yeah.
And then it's after this that I wrote the chapter. I have been in other books as well, and I've been fortunate enough to be best-selling author in those books. But then I realized, okay, what am I? How can I help people?
Yeah.
And the thing I'm female, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's narrowed it down to females. And then people came to me and asked me, okay, because I've always been like following up on my economy and things.
Yeah.
So people came to me and asked me about financial things. Mm-hmm. How could I keep track on where I was just now? And then someone said, okay, you are a money management strategist.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'll add financial to that. And then personally, well, I've been on the journey myself, right?
Yeah.
So I know what it takes to be there. And professionally, I can really relate to people that are working in the profession.
Yeah.
And that I know what they can do, not just be stuck in have to do what you said before.
Yeah.
What's normal and things.
Yeah.
Because if you stand out, you can really, really be someone else.
Yeah.
You can be your true one, right? And then in this as well, it's so important to communicate about
this.
Because communication is really the sense of everything, right?
Yeah.
So if you are communicating properly and your message is understood, you will conquer.
So talk to me, Inger, about the coming to grips with, and you made yourself vulnerable. To do that is to delve into yourself and to overcome a fear or something, overcome something that you deem troublesome in your life. Let's go with that. What was it that you had to overcome, and how the steps that you took with the coaching of this, how did that help you? And once you walked through it, how did you feel?
That's a completely different subject. Because what I did, what I actually had to go through was something that happened to me when I was 20 years old. And that was really kind of following me all the way through until I released it.
And that helped,
I had hidden it so much for myself, down in my dungeon, if you like. So I couldn't really build the foundation on that because it was cracked. So I had to sit with that sorrow from 20 years. I mean, it's 50 years or so, almost, that I had to kind of go through to be healed. But what it really happened to me was that I had to realize that the pillars I was based on growing up didn't have to reflect me as an individual. I mean, religion is not kind of something that is condemning you. Religion is there for helping you if you want it to do, right? But I felt I was too far out somewhere to be at all able to be rescued, if you like.
And when you, because I can still sense some of the pain in when you're having that conversation. When you came to that realization, because I tell people you have to surrender to that. How did you? Because it takes courage to do that, Inga, to come to the place of surrender. It is not a place of weakness, I tell people, because the perception is that it's a place of weakness, but it is not. It is a place of strength, because you are going so deep into, as you said, you crawl down into those dungeons, and you are unearthing all of the pain to bring it to the surface to then release it, because if you don't, it can, they will say, fester and cause dis-ease within the body. How did that make you feel once you, you carried it for so long, when you released it and you began to take that breath and like breathe, this is good.
I actually wrote about that in Tapping to Your Power, the chapter I wrote there. I would never have written that chapter if it would have been for that I released it. So that was really something that it lifted me. I was like, oh, I'm free. And the thing is, when you talk about this, it takes courage. Yes, it does. But I mean, all my life, people have talked about fear and things. I'm the one that jumps out of a parachute from an airplane. I jump wherever. I go first and then I think. And fear for me is kind of, that's not me in a way. But it was then I realized fear, because I was fearful of going down in my dungeon. I needed to be courageous, as you say, to do that and sit there. But I mean, from that experience, what I tell people is, don't ever wait as long as I did. Take action to get away from fear. Your fear for some people, but also from your own judgment of yourself. And also seek help, because there is help. Make sure you get in touch with the right to help you.
That's important, to find the right guide, the ones that have been through, the ones that are not, and the reasoning by which they are there is they find the ones in that have a servant heart. If they don't, that's how you do. I tell people, if you're looking for a life coach and all the other, find the one that has a servant heart, because that's the one that will have gone through and have learned the value of their journey once they're out. And the reason for their journey is so that they can then be that servant and assist that person, because then he or she can identify with your pain, because they've been there. And so they're not there to exploit. They're there to comfort you. They're there to show empathy. They're there to hug you. They're there to encourage you that, yes, you can do this, because I am an example. And because I am, you can do it. I have the faith in you that believe. And that's the type of person that you need to bring you from those dungeons, as you say, location where you can then shine. As you said, you become free. And beyond that, there isn't the blessing beyond that. Isn't that a great place to be when you come out from that space? It's beautiful, isn't it?
Yes. And also, I've been trained by Seal Stanford at Advanced Coaching and Leadership Center. And they have something they call processing.
Yeah.
Processing is kind of asking a structured way of asking questions, if you like.
Yes.
And I didn't think I could do that, but then I did it, and I've got testimonials stated. One stated, "You saved my marriage." Another one said to me, actually, she didn't write it so much in the testimonial, but she said, "When you helped me, it was like I went out from a big." What do you call those animals that have shields on of them? I've forgotten the name of it.
Mm.
Like a beagle.
Yeah.
Like a beagle. Yeah. Like you lost all the shield.
Yeah.
And you came out as the one there. So it was like a big weight was lifted.
Yeah.
And I hearing that from people was like, wow, can I do that? Can I do that?
Yeah.
And where did I get that? Well, when I think about it from my experience, right?
Yeah. You went through it, because when I think that is the gift that we receive once we've gone. It changes us at a deeper level than money, than any kind of money will ever do.
Mm-hmm.
It changes you to a level that you can then offer to individual that is in need of that energy that you have, and the knowledge and the wisdom from there. And I think when you comfort them from that place, because you've been through it, your belief system in coming out is strong, is powerful, and they kind of can sense that energy as you transfer it into them, because you know that you know that you know that they're going to be okay.
Yeah, I know that. And sometimes you have to push them a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Dare to do this. Yeah. Don't be afraid about it.
Yeah, it's newness. And we are, as a human, as a species, we are a little apprehensive with the newness. And that's where the unknown, and that's where the fear kicks in. Because we're not from, it's a place of unfamiliarity. So when we are in a place of familiarity, we just hang out, But if it's unfamiliar, we get a little nervous, we get a little apprehensive, and it needs a little coach to kind of say, oh, you can do this, and just pull them forward a little. But once they start, you see that smile on their face, like you said, when they come and they tell you of the things that you did from being with them and spending the time with them. And the energy and the smile that is inside of you, that joy that is unspeakable, there's no price that anyone can put on it. And that is that's our reward, because we get to enjoy that and we live this life. There's this energy in living life, and we get to experience that all the time. Isn't that a blast?
It is truly. And also, when you do this, you radiate something, so you are attracting similar people to you.
Yes.
People that you can share this journey with.
Yeah.
That you really can communicate with. That is your new environment.
Yes.
And it is out there for everyone, right?
Yes. I mean, you got yours at a ripe young age, when you retire.
Yeah.
There's no, as you said earlier, there's no excuse to not begin. All you have to do, I tell people, what it takes to begin is to make a decision. And once you make
and take the first step.
Yes. And that is what I tell them. You have to find that statement that you are putting your hope in, your belief system in. I'm going to do this. Not want. I'm going to do this. And then when you say it and you believe it, you will do the necessary work, because beyond that statement, there's a lot of work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you have also to remember to celebrate every little step on the way.
Yeah.
Because if people don't celebrate what you're doing, they will stop.
Yeah. And that's where the gratefulness comes in. Be grateful of everything. Be grateful. Mm. And once you live a life of gratefulness, and you want to celebrate those times when you get a glimpse of a little exposure to the spiritual realm, when you get to see some beautiful things. It's really good.
Oh, yeah.
So here you are, you write these beautiful books and all the different things as they're coming in. The Power of You. I love that, by the way. That is so, such a beautiful title. I wish I had thought about it. But,
so you're writing a book now?
I wrote a couple of them, but I love that title because that is a beautiful journey. And I talk to them, Inger, about the journey of you, because that is important to embark on. A lot of people, you mentioned fearfulness. A lot of people are in a state of fearfulness because of that. Talk to them about and encourage someone that to begin their journey to learn about the power of you.
I would say one thing, because what you said just now, be grateful.
Mm-hmm.
I have a gratitude process I do every morning.
Yeah.
I have 10 things I'm grateful for. And if you all think about what you're grateful for, you would realize that you have so much in your life to be grateful. And then I also set up one thing I have to do, or not have to, I choose to do today.
Yeah.
One goal I have, right? And then what am I willing to give to other people? And then what am I happy about now?
Mm-hmm.
Because happiness is attracting happiness, right?
Yeah.
So those are the things I do in the morning. And then in the evening, I follow up with, how well did I accomplish my goal?
Mm-hmm.
And what did I do well?
Yeah.
And if I were to be happier, what would that be? And combine that with having a vision board or something. For me, you see in the background, I have a picture there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my, that's actually my holiday home I'm going to buy sometime.
I love it.
And have stretch your goals, right?
Yeah.
Just stretch yourself, because that is so, so important.
It is, isn't it? You, again, I love your story because, in the natural, it is, you accomplish what they told us that it was the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you got there, you said, mm-mm. And so you began a journey to stretch yourself. And as a result of you doing that, look at the impact that you have made in the lives of people as you begin to stretch yourself. When in some cases people would retract once they retired, they'd probably just lay on the couch and, you know, maybe that's about it, you know, go to sleep.
Watch the television.
Yeah. You know, but here you are, as you said, we ought to stretch ourselves. We ought to experience it, it will change your life, the newness of living, even after retirement. There's this newness of living. I just love life. I just love life. I love breathing.
Yeah.
I love just the wind blowing on my face.
Oh, yeah.
A child laughing. Everything changes, and it has a deeper flavor to the process and the time of enjoying that. So it is my hope that people would come and join us on this side.
yeah, me as well. And I have to say one last thing,
mm-hmm.
because happiness is so important, right?
Yeah.
And this was something I learned from working at IBM, actually, a long time ago, because I was not feeling so happy. And then this guy that was on the same level as I was, and we were in the same management group, and he said to me, do you know what I do when I wake up in the morning and I'm not feeling okay? I stand in front of the mirror, and then I start laughing to myself, laughing to this angry-looking guy in the mirror. And after a while, I laugh for real, and then you get the smile with you all day.
Yeah.
So that is important.
That is powerful, because your laughter and your smile is not dependent on anyone, is it?
No, and it's contagious.
Yeah, so that's beautiful.
You meet someone and you smile, right?
Yeah. Inger, I want to thank you for coming by Threads of Enlightenment. This was beautiful. Like, you were the first interviewer that I had, interviewee that I had that had achieved what they said that you should. And then you looked at that and go, nope, that's not it. That's not me. I love that. Thank you so much. I enjoyed every second of this conversation. And I do thank you from the bottom of my heart coming by and sharing with us your journey.
Thank you for having me, Ken. And do you know where to find me if someone wants to get in touch with me, right?
Yeah, we're going to provide all of that information so that they can get access, because as I mentioned, Threads of Enlightenment is simply a conduit by which the audience get a chance to enjoy you. They purchase your book. I tell them all to buy your book, because I always say to people, when you sit down with an author's book, you are having that private conversation with the author. You are having that one-on-one experience. The energy that the author would say to you in words are written in those pages, and it carries the same force. Once you sit down with your coffee and your tea and you're uninterrupted, you're talking to Inger herself and you're having this one-on-one lesson, and she's teaching you. So I will make sure that they have everything that you need.
Thank you.